This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Also expected to be joined by Joe Randa today, Royals fan favorite. Joe Randa will be on the show in the 4 o'clock hour. Also, Brett Saberhagen will be on the show in the 5 o'clock hour. Got a very busy show planned for you guys as we get closer and closer and closer to opening day. Let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by our next guest. He is one of the best pitchers in the history of the Kansas City Royals. He is in the Kansas City Royals Hall of Fame. He is now a color commentator for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Mark Gubazaw joins us on the show today. Mark, always appreciate having you on the show. So we talked a lot about Witt Jr. on the show over the last couple of weeks, and you were somebody who was called up to the big leagues really young in your career. You got here at 19, 20 years old. What is it like to be called up at such a young age?
A dream come true. Growing up in the Philly area and playing baseball 3-4 months a year, maybe, and then all of a sudden you look up, you know, and you're in the major leagues at 21. I was, you know, it was an absolute dream come true. I was at the World Series Game 6 when the Royals were playing the Phillies as a fan. And then 3 years later, here I am with the Royals with a chance to, you know, go to the postseason our very first year back in 1984.
What was it like to be at that young of an age and also pitching in a World Series? Because you talk about being as a fan, so you get to see it up close and see that the intensity in those games are obviously very different than regular season games. And then fast forward 5 years later, you're actually participating in the World Series.
Yeah, that's the thing. You scratch your head because, like I said, I was a huge baseball fan all my life. I was played baseball starting at 8 years old and going through the high school level and then getting drafted by the Royals and the excitement level of that too. And you know, in just a short period of time after getting drafted out of high school, you're in the playoffs and in the World Series. It was, you know, I knew of the organization for a lot of years. I just researched it. You know, they had a lot of similarities to the Phillies. They were both getting into playoffs pretty much every year there in the mid to late 70s. But still not quite getting there to the World Series, and they finally met each other in 80, and then, you know, then being part of the Royals in 84 and then in 85 when we went to the World Series and won it. It was just a great bunch of guys. I was lucky enough, you know, Saves and I and Danny Jackson to have so many great mentors coming in there from Paul Splittorff, Larry Gora, Dennis Leonard, Dan Quisenberry, and then eventually Bud Black was our mentor. Even though he hadn't had a long period of time in the major leagues, he was still a guy that we respected, Charlie Lee Brown. So we had a young staff, but we also learned a lot from the guys in front of us that really helped mentor us, and eventually we were able to do that to the younger pitchers come along as well.
Were you guys going out on the town? Like, where did you guys go out? What part of the town did you live in?
We live right in the Country Club Plaza. Me and Saves were roommates our first year, and then that winter he got married, but I stayed down there in the Plaza area myself for my first couple of years. I just loved it. I mean, I still, every time I go back to Kansas City, you know, we stay there as a member of the Angels broadcasting team. We stay right down in the plaza. And it's funny because I tell all the guys on the team and even my partners on the, you know, in the broadcast booth that I live literally right across the street from the hotel we stay at there in Kansas City. And they're like, no way. I said, how was it? It was a blast. I mean, be able to walk to restaurants, you know, if I was going to have a cold one after a game, I could walk everywhere. And That's the beauty of being down there in the Country Club Plaza. It was so much fun. It was a lot of excitement, a lot of life down there. So I love my time, especially staying there.
Were you single at the time? Because, I mean, good-looking dude for a team that's on the World Series, like 20-something years old. It must have been a pretty good time of your life.
Yeah, I was single my first couple years, and I got married in 86. So my first two, I was. But, and then we moved out, me and my wife, we moved out to the Overland Park area. We had a couple of apartments there off of Warnell Road, really, in Kansas City area as well. And then we worked our way out towards Overland Park, and that was cool. We were able to play some golf and all that stuff at Deer Creek. We lived for quite a while. But at that point early on, it was, like I said, to be able to walk to places was great. And, you know, I had such a good time at that point.
Right now we're talking to Mark Gubazov, Kansas City Royal from 1984 to 1996. He's in the Royals Hall of Fame. Last year was obviously a very different season. It was a shortened season, also no fans. What's it like? How excited are you to finally have fans back at the park?
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, for the players themselves, even my conversations with, you know, from Mike Trout to Albert Pujols and all those guys, it was a difficult thing because you get motivated from your home fans. And then when you're on the road, you get motivated from the fans giving you all kinds of grief as well. So it wasn't the same for them, and it's not the same even as on the broadcast side, because I love interacting with the fans, going, walking through the stadium, going up to my booth, and also be able to look out there and just see the excitement level for the fans, you know, whether it's, you know, two strikes on a batter or, you know, a guy gets a big hit with, you know, somebody on base or a walk-off home run or whatever it's going to be. The excitement level you gain and get from having the fans there is huge. And to have them back, even if it's going to be a limited capacity early on, it'll be loud. And I know for myself personally, I'm going to be really excited to see them back in there because, like I said, I'm a fan of sports. I'm a fan of baseball. And for them to be back in the stadium, it's going to be great for them as well.
Gooby, you've had a front row seat, if you will, for the career of Mike Trout, at least to this point. At his prime, which you could argue is right now, and at Albert Pujols' prime, who's the better ball player?
Well, you know, that's a great question because, you know, I delve into, you know, the Trouty's first 10 years and Albert's first 10 years. I mean, Albert Pujols, you can make an argument, one of the all-time greats right now. I mean, in the history of the game, his numbers stack up with anybody. To make a choice between the two, especially the first 10 years, you know, I didn't see Albert all the time. I'm just looking at numbers, but I'm seeing Trout do things every day. And Albert won a couple Gold Gloves at first base, so he was an excellent fielder as well. You know, first base position's a little different than, obviously, center field position. And Albert doesn't, you know, run the bases as well as Trout, but although Albert, you can make an argument, is one of the best base runners in his day. I mean, he wasn't going to steal 40, 50 bags, but he can run the bases well. Even Tony La Russa says that all the time, how great of a base runner Albert was. So it's a real tough one. I probably still leaned a little bit towards Trout just because of all the other things he's been able to do and be able to say that I've seen all these things happen as compared to watching a lot of highlights with Albert. But being around Albert for the last 10 years, I've never been around a better human being in my life. He's a phenomenal person. What he does off the field goes unnoticed, which he wants it that way because he doesn't want to ever tell him, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. He just does it, and he's a phenomenal person. So I can't wait to see him get in there, and I'm hoping when the time comes when he's voted for the Hall of Fame, it's 100% unanimous decision because his numbers are unreal. I mean, doubles, home runs, RBI, all those things, and a world-class person and a world champion to boot.
Speaking of Albert, there's a chance that this is his final year. What's it like to be following and covering a player like that who does have a chance to be 100% voted into the Hall of Fame here in 5 years?
Well, the thing is, he's been unreal in spring training, too. And, you know, coming into camp, Jarrett Walsh was going to be the first baseman, and he still may not be getting most of the games at first base. He's a young player who's got great hands at first base, but Albert Pujols is, you know, he looks great. He's happy. He's relaxed. You know, they were saying 300 bats. I'd be shocked if he doesn't get 450 at bats right now. The way he's swinging the bat, he's crushing the ball. He's being really solid defensively at first base, and I think he just realizes all this year about him now is because he's done everything. I mean, he's real close to 700 career home runs as well as that 700 career doubles, and he's in the top five all time in doubles and home runs, and there's no one else in the history of the game can say that. So he just wants to win, and he has such a relaxed mentality about him right now that I think he's going to have a really, really good season. And if for the Angels to get to the postseason, he's going to be every bit as important as Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani.
So we're celebrating opening day. You started one opening day for the Royals back in 1989. What's it like to start on such a special day on the baseball calendar?
I still firmly believe, and whether everyone else agrees with me or not, I think it should be a national holiday opening day in baseball, because there's something about that more than, and I, you know, I'm a huge sports fan of everything from football, basketball, and hockey, soccer, everything, but there's something about opening day in baseball that's nothing, there's nothing like it in sports. And to get that opportunity to be on the mound at home like I was on opening day, and at that point Royal Stadium, now Kauffman Stadium, just an unreal thrill, because just the feeling that everybody, they battled through the cold of winter, and here you are at the start of, you know, this rejuvenation. You're it's spring, it's getting warmer, everyone's excited about an upcoming baseball season. There really is nothing like opening day, especially when you get a chance to be an opening day pitcher, because you started all that. Very first pitch you throw starts the season for your club and the fans.
I got to ask you a Bo Jackson question before you get out of here. You played with a lot of great players, but is there any former teammate that you have that you get asked more about than Bo Jackson?
No, I mean, you know, from the 30 on 30 for that ESPN special it was on, to there's been about four or five different books written about Bo, and, it's a shame that he didn't play longer, or if he played in this era where we have social media, which is such a big force, that people would understand how ridiculously phenomenal he was. I mean, to do what he did in baseball, to do what he did in football, and to do it at the same, you know, calendar year and never miss a beat, and have all, you know, we were together in the All-Star game in 89, and every single player, and we're talking about so many guys that are in the Hall of Fame right now, were just in awe of him. And I'm sitting there just laughing, because, you know, he's my teammate. We're just having fun. We flew back after the game to, you know, New York to take on the Yankees, and the pilots are coming out of the cockpits and asking for his autograph. We're walking through the airport. I'm thinking I'm walking with Mick Jagger or Brad Pitt, because everyone's running up to him. It was that insane. But and then going to a football game, because he gave me sideline passes every game for the Raiders, and all the football players were like, this guy's unbelievable. And he wasn't even in, you know, their two-a-days at the beginning of the year, which, you know, made them, you would think would make them mad, because he's missed the tough part of the season. And he actually, you know, moves Marcus Allen, a Hall of Famer, to the bench. He was that good. And, you know, just the throw from the outfield in Seattle, getting Harold Reynolds at the plate, to, you know, scaling the wall, to hitting the longest home run I think I've ever seen at Royal Stadium before they put, you know, the Jumbotron over there in left center field, and the waterfalls and the seats there, that thing almost left the entire stadium. The wow factor with him was nothing like anybody else in sports. And it's a shame, like I said, it was a short career, but it would have been way better if it would have been during this era, where we would be able to see that on Twitter or TikTok, anything you can imagine, Instagram. He would have been on there every single second.
That is Mark Gubazaw. He pitched for the Royals from 1984 to 1996. He's a two-time All-Star, won a World Series with the club in 1985. He also was in the Royals Hall of Fame. Gooby, appreciate you coming on today, man. Thank you.
Guys, I really appreciate it. I love talking to my friends back home in Kansas City.
Absolutely. Always good to catch up with the Royals Hall of Famer, Mark Gubazaw. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. I was thinking about what you said earlier when you were talking about when was the last time that the Royals had an ace, or when they had a bona fide true number one that would be the number one for just about any team in baseball. And as we were talking to Gubazaw, I wrote this down. This is probably the first time since Gubazaw, since Brett Saberhagen, and then they added David Cone around that time, where I think there's been so much optimism around the rotation. Like, even in 2014 and 2015, there wasn't that level of optimism around the rotation. Certainly around the lineup and the bullpen, but you basically needed the starting rotation to not mess it up and just create that bridge until you got to the bullpen. But if you're looking at the Royals prospects right now, so Daniel Lynch, he's their second prospect. He's 24 years old. Asa Lacy, he's their third prospect. He's 21. Jackson Kowar, he's 24 years old. And then you look at their opening day rotation. We're talking about Brad Keller, you think has a chance to be an ace or certainly a true number one. We're talking about Brady Singer, Chris Bubich. I mean, there's six guys right there that have a potential to be guys that you think could either be an ace on the high end, like a couple of the guys, or at worst a number three pitcher. I can't really think of a time in recent Kansas City Royals history, at least since 1995, so like post-strike, where you can think of there's this much optimism around what their rotation can be for this club.
You know, won the Cy Young in 1994, right?
David Cone.
Yep. And he was the one, I guess you could say. Apier was the two, and then Gubazov was the three. That's when you really got something cooking, when you don't have to force somebody to be your ace or your number one. Like, for a couple of years, we kind of tried to call Danny Duffy the number one. I'm not sure he ever was. We called the late, great Yordano Ventura ace, partially because it made sense, his last name Ventura. But he was never, I don't think, actually a true major league ace. I think Brad Keller has a chance to be. And the good thing about that is if Keller's an ace, and then you got a couple other guys like Brady Singer and an Ace of Lacy, as you mentioned, and a Daniel Lynch, it's a lot of homegrown talent. You go back to that Royals World Series rotation, and it was okay. But besides the aforementioned Yordano Ventura, it was basically bought. It was Edinson Volquez. It was Chris Young. It was Johnny Cueto. The Royals have a chance to have a real good rotation that's homegrown, which means at least for the next few years, it's pretty cheap also.
Also, when you look at their rebuild and how this is very different than the last time, I mean, most of the star players that you had in the last rebuild that you had high draft picks, you spent on positional players. Now, you obviously spent that on Bobby Witt Jr., was the number two overall pick, but you spent that capital on Eric Hosmer, position player. He obviously made it up here. You spent that on Mike Moustakas, high draft pick. This rebuild was very different, where when you had those shots to get top 10 players in the draft, you selected college baseball players. Like, out of the list of the guys that I just gave you, so their top five prospects right now, according to MLB.com, Bobby Witt Jr., we expect him to be up either at some point this season or definitely the opening day roster next year. They have Daniel Lynch as an ETA for this year. So at some point between now and the end of the season, I expect Daniel Lynch to get some starts for this team. Ace of Lacy, he could be a guy in the Bobby Witt Jr. mold. Wouldn't be shocked to see him in September, has a legitimate chance to break the club next year. Jackson Coar, I think he's going to be on the team starting, getting quality starts for this team. We could be talking around at the All-Star break, we could be talking about the 4th of July, where their five-man rotation, four out of the five guys, and maybe Duffy is still in that rotation, we're talking about that could be your rotation in 2022, 2023, 2024, and if you lose one of those guys, you trade one of those guys to get that marquee bat that you need to get you over the hump because you've got enough starting pitching.
And that's what makes it different. The last time, I would say the Royals had an ace. I think the last time the Royals had a true ace by baseball standards was Zach Greinke. And to be fair, that might have been pushing it. He probably became an ace right after he left Kansas City. But either way, I think that Greinke, you knew it was fleeting. The team around him wasn't very good, and he wasn't happy here. All those guys that you just talked about, they're either happy with their current situation, like a Brad Keller or a Brady Singer that's already got major league experience, or they haven't even dipped their toes with the big league club yet. So it does feel like the Royals are that volcano that's about to erupt. I'm not thinking that they're going to erupt this year and overachieve and the lava's going to start flowing. But once it does, with all those pitchers that you just mentioned, they're going to be trouble. They're going to be something to deal with because of their top 30 best players in their minor league system right now, according to MLB.com, 18 of them are pitchers. 18 of them are pitchers, which doesn't include Coar, who's already got major league experience, which doesn't include Singer, who's already been up here, and obviously doesn't include Brad Keller. So you want to talk about a team that's got more quality young arms that are close to the big leagues than anybody else? You're talking about the Royals.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Keep it locked in right here. Also in about 20 minutes, Joe Randa, former Royals fan favorite, former Royals third baseman, the Joker. Joe Randa will be on the show coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Before we do that, Rob, hit my music. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but if we had to induct former Kansas City or maybe current Kansas City athletes into the Always Hurt Hall of Fame, who are we throwing in there? Because I would imagine if you are the Roger Commissioner of this, Sammy Watkins and Adalberto Mondesi are first ballot. I mean, that's basically like letting in Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You got to put those guys into the Hall of Fame first ballot. It shouldn't even be a vote. I don't know if you heard the story or not, but they said the time they spent deliberating Peyton Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy was 17 seconds. The guy stood up, said Peyton Manning, and sat back down. That was all he had to say, and then they voted on Peyton Manning. Who else are we putting in the Always Hurt Hall of Fame? I feel bad doing this. Can I suggest Eric Berry for the Always Hurt Hall of Fame?
Yeah, he's a lock.
I feel bad throwing Eric Berry in there. But that last year and a half was nuts.
I got a guy I feel even worse bringing up. Can this guy go into the All-Injured Hall of Fame? And I think he's first ballot, and I think he's unanimous. Bo Jackson?
I can't throw Bo in there.
But he deserves it.
I can't throw Bo in there.
The biggest question with Bo Jackson is always, what could have been had he not got injured? First ballot, All-Injured team. I hate to say it, but it's true.
I can't throw Bo in there because Bo's injury didn't happen playing baseball, didn't happen in Kansas City, and we're talking about a freak accident. This Adalberto Mondesi thing, as much as I love the guy, we ain't talking about freak accidents like how in the world did this happen. I'm talking always injured, like whenever you, I'm talking like Brody Croyle always injured. Like Brody Croyle just for somehow was always hurt, was always inactive. How do you get hurt in practice, y'all? Not even hitting. You wear the red shirt because you're a quarterback. How are you always injured? I'm talking about that always injured team. I can't throw Bo in first ballot. I ain't doing that.
Adalberto Mondesi's injuries, though, are a special kind of injury. That guy can get hurt getting out of bed. That guy could get hurt playing fantasy football. It's ridiculous. Like, if you go over him historically, it's not like he's had a nagging blank injury. It's been this, it's been that, and now it's an oblique, and an oblique doesn't tend to go away, and the season hasn't even started, so... Yeah, he's definitely at the very top. You got to have Sammy Watkins as a unanimous member. Joe Montana, maybe. I don't know if he was here long enough, but missed a lot
of
time.
Joe Montana was 192 years old playing football. I can't throw him in first ballot.
Michael Porter Jr., does he make our team?
I mean, if we're getting those jokes off, Joel Embiid ain't on that team.
No, he's on the squad for
sure. I'm just saying, I mean, if we throwing out the always injured team, Joel Embiid.
Absolutely.
We throwing Cliff Alexander on that team, or that was like a different thing why he didn't play. I'm not sure why Cliff Alexander wasn't playing the second half of the season. Was it an injury thing or
no? It was a different thing.
Was it eligibility or what?
It was
like, why was he not playing?
It was a different thing. Okay, we'll leave it at that. You don't need to keep bringing those guys up.
Wondering.
Billy Preston, Silvio De Sousa. It was not an injury thing. It was a different thing.
Rob, is there anybody that you're throwing in the Always Hurt Hall of Fame in Kansas City? So we know Sean has put Sammy Watt. When you walk in there, it might be a Sammy Watkins statue when you walk in there of his catch over Richard Sherman in the Super Bowl whenever you walk in our Always Hurt Hall of Fame. Adalberto Mondesi, he doesn't really have that moment, so it's probably him sitting on the bench and you just walk in the Always Hurt Hall of Fame. Who would you put on this list?
Rob, before you answer, let me ask a text line of question.
Somebody said Tony Moyaki. Tony Moyaki is absolutely a first. John Baldwin might be a first ballot Always Hurt Hall of Famer.
913-576-7610. Text us on the Jay Southland Toe Service text line. Because a lot of Chiefs fans are Royals fans, and Royals fans are Chiefs fans, like the three of us. Who's caused you more heartache and more frustration over the last, like, 2.5-3 years? Is it Sammy Watkins? Are you a sucker like C-Dot? Well, that's not fair. Are you a sucker like a lot of people out there on the text line? Playoff Sammy, they need this guy. He's part of the reason they won the Super Bowl. Or is it Adalberto Mondesi? Because after today's news, I don't want to say I'm done with Mondesi because I'm not.
He's on a 10-day DL. You're already ready to call it quits on the 10-day DL?
I'm not done with him, but I'm done playing the games that you are. I'm done being a sucker. Like, I'm expecting this. You know how they say, like, prepare for the worst, expect the best, whatever the hell that saying is? With Mondesi, just expect him to be injured. He's going to be hurt. Early, often, and this season before the season even got going. Like, are you surprised by today's news whatsoever?
You can't be. How can you be surprised?
That's what I'm saying. When you heard it, didn't you just kind of have to laugh so you didn't cry? Adalberto Mondesi is going to miss the first 10 games. I went, of course he is. That's what he does.
The answer is Kyle Zimmer. Kyle Zimmer's all injured team.
The text line has given me one that I think is even better than that.
Hochaver.
Hochaver's not bad.
Jeremy Offeld.
Oh, he had blister problems for like 10 years.
Jeremy Offeld had blisters for 4 consecutive years.
Yo, bro, fix those blisters.
It never made any sense how he always had. Text line has thrown in D-Ford. D-Ford is an absolute first ballot Always Hurt Hall of Famer. I got to throw Jeremy Offeld. I completely forgot about Jeremy Offeld until the text line brought him up. Jeremy Offeld's blister issue was a thing for at least 4 seasons.
And I know that he played like a decade ago, but didn't we have the medical technology? Like, didn't we have advancements to figure out blisters at that point? That dude would miss half of his starts because of blisters.
I mean, once he got it figured out, which was not here, he became a really good reliever. But
isn't there a cream?
Just was.
Can't you go to some sort of a dermatologist or something and they prescribe you something and you squeeze it on or something?
I don't think it's acne.
I'm not saying it's herpes or acne. I know what it is. It's a blister. Well,
herpes don't go away. So that's very different.
They got a cream for it, though. I'm pretty sure. Like, there's got to be something. You don't think there's anything to get rid of blisters? It's just time. That's it.
Well, the Royals didn't have it. The Rockies had it. The Rockies,
St. John's Wort stuff.
The Rockies turned him into a potent eighth.
Because they know how to get rid of blisters.
Breland Speaks is a perfect, always injured guy.
It doesn't count.
He
when
can't be first ballot though.
Overweight is not an injury. All right, that's not an injury. That's a different thing.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Adalberto Mondesi is injured. We'll play for you what the manager of the team has to say about it. That's next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Your national cash contest code word for 430 is KIND. K-I-N-D. KIND. K-I-N-D. Text that word to 72881. KIND. K-I-N-D. Text KIND to 72881. You got a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Joe Randa, one of the more popular players in recent memory with the Kansas City Royals, always a fan favorite. Joe Randa will be on the show coming up in about 15 minutes. So, if you haven't heard by now, Adalberto Mondesi found himself on the disabled list. He played on Monday, felt the tweak. He now finds himself on the disabled list. Here is Royals manager Mike Matheny on what happened to Adalberto Mondesi.
That one caught us off guard. Had no idea, didn't see a thing. And, you know, we're hypersensitive to watching just about everything. So when I got that call yesterday, obviously that wasn't the one we were looking for. But it is what we do. We make adjustments, and it's the next man up. So we're starting that. Early. We were very fortunate that we had as successful of a spring as we had health-wise. But to come down to the very last game right there, that's a shame, because I hurt for Mondy. I know how hard he's worked. I know how good he looked. Just a shame. And I hurt for our guys, the fact that, something thrown at us right there last minute. But besides that, here's what it is. Now what? Now what is we're going to give some opportunity to bring Nicky Lopez back. Nicky will be out there tomorrow, and he'll be playing shortstop for us. But we also know that Hanser Alberto played a very good and a strong, solid shortstop for us through the spring, and we have all the faith in the world to put him there as well. But, you know, just right now, we're hurting for Mondy more than anything else. We know that our guys will come in and do what we need to do. But hurting for him here for a little while. You know, we told it's going to be, at least a couple weeks. And so somebody else has got to step up and get it done.
Mondy hurts for you too, Coach.
I know we're talking about a very, very limited sample. Like, Rob thinks he could be out for the whole month. Let's cut it down the middle and call it 2 weeks. If you're Nicky Lopez and the Royals, I don't want to say gave up on you, but they
clearly didn't think you were good enough to make the opening day roster. And now you find yourself on the opening day roster and you're starting on opening day. Man, you got like a 10 to 14 day period to make it a very difficult decision for the Royals. If Nicky Lopez is hitting 270, let's say the first 10 games, gets off to a decent start and is playing a really good shortstop defensively, they ain't sending him down instantly. Like, I think a big part of it with Nicky Lopez was confidence wise. And if he's hitting worth his weight and really giving you a boost offensively, I don't think it's just going to be a very simple point and click. You're sending him down if he's playing with confidence. So if you're Nicky Lopez, sure, you're disappointed about being sent down and not making the original roster. Well, it doesn't matter. You're now starting opening day for this team. And there could be a situation where you get 20 starts with this team as an audition to kind of prove why you can be here for another 60 days.
Yeah, but his confidence has to be absolutely at rock bottom, has to be completely shot. The team literally told you, what, 3 days before the season started, you thought you were going to be on the big league club. Everybody thought you were going to be on the big league club, that you're actually not going to be and that you need some work. I don't think that you want to talk about headstrong. You want to talk about mental toughness. If Nicky Lopez can come up here and for 10 days or 2 weeks when Mondesi's out and keep playing the same as he has in the field the entire time and hit 270, that would be amazing. But the last time we saw him, he was hitting like .198. He was hitting like .115 so far this spring. And now the Royals told him that you're not our guy and may never be. Oh, wait, actually, Nicky, don't go too far because we need you. Pretend like that conversation we had a few days ago didn't happen. We still got confidence you're our guy. Like, that's going to be a tough one for Nicky Lopez to go out there and do.
I mean, athletes, we know, love to play that chip on our shoulder card. I mean, I can't think of a guy right now that's going to start on the opening day roster that has a bigger chip on their shoulder based on what's happened the last 72 hours than Nicky Lopez. Go use it, go play well, and go get off to a really hot start and help this team tread water as they're missing their number three hitter. Here's Mike Matheny on the lineup and when Adalberto Mondesi got hurt.
With our recent change, we're still kind of making sure we're talking through everything as far as the lineup goes. But he did get hurt in that the last game. And apparently it was something minor on his first at-bat on a swing. We didn't know. I'd like to have known. He did bunt his next at-bat, but said that it was just something, wasn't a big deal. But the next day, which was yesterday, it was a bigger deal. So you guys know the rest of the way the field will look with Benny and left. You'll have Taylor in center field. The news that you may not have expected is Kyle Isabel will be starting in right field for us tomorrow. We're very excited for him. Then it'll go Dozier, Lopez, Witt, and Santana, and obviously Salvi behind the plate with George Soler. Soler will be our DH.
It's funny because on one side, I want to say, baseball injuries happen. Like, over the course of 162, guys are going to get nicks and bruises. Guys are going to be bumped from the lineup. Like, this is going to happen. Guys going on the 10-day DL with this kind of injury. But on the flip side, you got to also say, these things just seem to happen to Mondesi more than they seem to happen to other people. Some of us don't really know why. Some of us can't really explain it. But some guys just get injured more than other guys. And at least so far in his career, for whatever reason, Adalberto Mondesi has just been injured more frequently than other guys.
When did it happen? What's the chronological order that they're trying to tell us it happened? So the last time we saw Mondesi, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, he was trotting on the bases really slow because he hit a home run. That did happen, didn't it?
Correct.
And so they're telling us the injury happened earlier in the game. So he got hurt. They decided they would have him bunt. And then he came up at his next at bat, hit a home run, trotted around the bases, and then they decided to pull him. Maybe that's it. Maybe hurt Mondesi, if he's going to go out there and hit bombs, is the guy that we're looking for. I'm not saying the Royals are up to any funny business. It's just the timing of this is very curious, where we got a chance to see him. He hit a home run. He was expected to be part of the team. And now, literally, less than 24 hours before the first pitch of the season, we find out that it's an oblique or jejunum or duodenum or some sort of an injury. Like, this is so Adalberto Mondesi, isn't it?
I want to play this for you. This is our last cut. It is Mike Matheny. He was asked a question today about Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah. We're always talking about everybody, but we knew from the beginning if there were going to be any missteps at shortstop, anything happened at all, Nicky was that guy next in line that we knew would be able to trust. Bobby's obviously had a great spring, and I hope he continues to improve. But I think, just the message at that time was it's just not time yet. So hopefully he keeps working, but we're excited to watch Nicky and Hanser, see how they take advantage of this opportunity here at shortstop.
Sam,
can you go a little bit more in depth there? What is it about Bobby that's not right now? Is it more defense that you want him to work on down there? What?
You know, there's, I think Dayton's always very clear. Has to be an opportunity. That could be argued right now. And then is the player ready? Is he showing the things that you want to see? And a lot of that has to do with repetitions and always just trying to protect him. And he's answered a lot of questions, but just felt like we still need to see some things and gave him some things to work on too. You know, had most of his work at second base this spring. He's getting work at shortstop and even at third base right now with where he's working. So it's either right or it's not. And right now it's not. And that's not to say it couldn't happen sooner than later, but he's going to continue to work on some things and just very excited about how well he handles everything, including those kind of tough conversations that, hey, just trust us. We're going to get you here when the time is right. If you just keep doing the things, and here's a list of some things. And a lot of that is more repetitions and working around some of the intricacies of the position.
I know you're not 100% in belief of the Royals' stance on Bobby Witt Jr. I believe him. I will continue to believe this is a repetition thing. We've now heard from Dayton Moore. We've heard from Mike Matheny, the desire to have him sort of move around and play different positions, that I think this year you can sort of experiment with Bobby Witt Jr. and sort of find where his strengths and weaknesses are. And then next year, when you're talking, he's 21 years old on a team that we expect to sort of be able to run and contend for a wild card spot, or certainly be in the conversation to do so, Witt Jr. is ready to help you from day one.
We'll save this tape, Rob, because we're going to need to play it whenever Bobby Witt Jr.'s service time, whenever the year is up and he doesn't cost himself a year of service and they can use that on the back end. It'll be probably not the next day that the Royals put him out there, because that'll be too obvious. Then you're going to come out and go, maybe it was a service time thing, but it won't be longer than a week. Like, as soon as Bobby Witt Jr. is able to come up and it doesn't count as his first full major league season, it'll be about 5 minutes and it'll be up with the Royals.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Joe Randa, fan favorite third baseman for the Kansas City Royals. Joe Randa will join us coming up on the other side. Your Royals opening day coverage is brought to you by our friends over at Google Fiber.
The Drive. Weekdays 2-6.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Brett Saberhagen, arguably the greatest pitcher in Royals history. Brett Saberhagen will be on the show coming up in about 20 minutes or so as we get you ready for opening day. We've been having a lot of fun today. If you missed it, Mark Gubazaw was on the show earlier today. Rex Hudler was on the show earlier today. Dennis Leonard was also on the show earlier today. Let's be joined by our next guest, Joe Randa, set to join us on the show. Joe, appreciate you coming on. Last year was very weird. No fans. It was a very disjointed season. How exciting is it that baseball is finally back and we're starting to see that return to normalcy?
Well, I think it's been an adjustment for everybody. It's been kind of hard to watch and hard to follow at times. And as a fan of the game, but also a fan of the Royals, I live in Arizona now, so it's a little bit harder to follow and track them. And this is the first spring training that I haven't been able to go be around the guys and kind of see the squad and see the guys. You know, I'm just following them like everybody else is online and just tracking their development.
Speaking of development, you talk about being around the guys. What's your relationship like with Hunter Dozier? Because I'm kind of looking at his career and sort of where he is. He kind of reminds me a little bit of you.
Hunter, I spent a lot of time with him in the minor leagues, and worked with him. And he's always been a guy that's a thinker, and he processes a lot. And sometimes guys like that take a little bit more time because they're always analyzing every swing, analyzing themselves all the time instead of sometimes playing. I think he's growing up and he's matured and he's showing what we kind of all thought he would end up being. And he's a great kid. He works hard, and I'm just really excited for him and happy for him, and to see that he's come into his own and he's learned a lot. And I'm very proud of him.
Joe, you were always a fan favorite here in your time in Kansas City. And as C-Dot mentioned,
you had a couple of different stints here. If you can remind me, whatever happened the first time, like, why did you ever leave and go to Pittsburgh in the first place?
Well, it wasn't my fault. They traded me, but I was in the Jeff King and Jay Bell trade to the Pirates. It's kind of my first, 96 was my first year where I've got consistent at-bats, and I did pretty well with those at-bats that I was given. Bob Boone basically had me platooning with Keith Lockhart at third base, and, you know, I got an opportunity. I took advantage of it, and I kind of thought I would be here for a while, and I bought a house that off season, and then I get the phone call that I've been traded. So it was a lot shorter stint than I would have wanted at that time, but it was probably good for me at that stage in my career, looking back, and because the Pittsburgh gave me an opportunity to play every day against righties and lefties, and Bob Boone basically let me hit against lefties. And so it was kind of a good move for my career that happened, but I was disappointed when it happened, but it ended up being a good thing for me.
Did you ever have any second thoughts about coming back to Kansas City the second time?
I didn't think it would ever happen. You know, I thought that once you kind of get traded from an organization until you become a free agent, you know, you're not going to get traded back there. And when it happened, actually the general manager, because I had gotten traded to the Mets in the winter, and the Mets had just signed Robin Ventura, so I kind of figured I wasn't going to be there very long, and it turned out it was like in December, and the general manager, Steve Phillips, called me, and he said, where do you want to go? I got two trades. You can go back to Kansas City, or you can go back to Pittsburgh. And I said, I would love to go back to Kansas City. I have a house there. And so he actually gave me the option. I could have said, no, I don't want to go back to Kansas City, and something different could have happened in my career. But I chose to come back, and it was a great thing. It was the birth of my son was that winter. And so it worked out. It was a pretty interesting ride, but it worked out. And then that's kind of where everything went from there for my next 6 years of my career in Kansas City.
What was it like playing on that 03 Tony Peña Believe team? Because as Royals fans, if you're around my age, you're a little bit too young to remember the 80 and 85 World Series. And, of course, the last five or 6 years have been great. But, man, my favorite year before a few years ago was the 2003 season.
Yeah, that obviously we actually had T-shirts made up in the clubhouse that had lightning in a bottle, because everything that Tony did just blossomed, and every movie made, and everybody had, you know, I don't want to say everybody had breakout years. It wasn't one of my better stat wise years, but everyone, we played well as a team, and it was an exciting year. I mean, you're right. That was the first year that I played in Kansas City. I actually felt that you felt energy at the ballpark, you know, during the week. You know, weekends, there's always somewhat energy at the ballpark, but during the week games, that's when you can tell that you have something good going on, because you have that energy during the week.
Right now we're talking to Joe Randa on The Drive as we start to celebrate opening day. You actually played in one of my favorite opening days. It was the next season in 2004. I'll never forget. This was a game that my parents made us leave early because they didn't think you guys were going to win. And then you score six runs in the bottom of the ninth inning and have a walk-off home run. If I remember correctly, I think it was a Mindy Lopez that actually hit the walk-off home run. What was it like being in that game and being a part of a comeback like that?
Well, first of all, I remember it being really windy, which it usually is somewhat windy at opening day in Kansas City. And I just remember it's just one of those games where you just feel like something interesting is going to happen, because there are a lot of little flares in that game that were like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. Holy cow, we just did that. And, you know, it was a snowball game where it snowballed in our right direction. But it was one of the more exciting opening days ever that I've ever played in. And opening day is always special, no matter where you play and what year. But that year, when you have a win like that, was really, really cool.
I'm sitting here and I'm going through your page. I don't think I've ever asked anybody, what is it like to break up a no-hitter in the ninth inning?
Yeah, against a really good guy who's an ex-Royal, Chris Young. But you know, it was a crazy game. I wasn't playing. I didn't start the game. And obviously you're watching, you can see what's kind of happening. And I could tell Chris was getting, he's laboring a little bit. He's over the 100-pitch mark. And Jim Tracy said, you know, I need you to pinch hit. I think we were losing maybe 3-0 or 4-0. And so I got in the box, and I had the year before I played for the Padres. So, you know, I knew a lot of guys on that team, and Chris wasn't on that team that year, but so I got in the box, and I knew he had a no-hitter. I didn't really think about, I'm going to break up his no-hitter. I actually just thought I'm just going to try to have a good at-bat. And I got in a hitter's count, and I squared one up and hit a home run. And, you know, I felt, you don't feel bad about because I did my job, but, you know, I felt bad because you don't, that's for, to get to that stage of a game and to work really hard was really difficult for him. And, some guys never even get close to that. And, you know, and I ended up seeing him at a restaurant after the game and went up to him and I said, I was sorry, you know, like, sorry, man. And he's such a generous professional and a great human being, you know, and he's just like, hey, you did your job, you know, and I didn't, but really, really interesting and fun moment for me, but also to bump into him after the game and then actually get to meet him at when he came back to the Royals and I was working with the Royals, so I got a chance to talk to him about it. It was pretty funny.
Joe, I know you're a good dude, but did you really feel bad? I mean, it was a home run. It's not like you bunted off the guy to break up the no-no.
I did my job, but you know there's certain things in this game that are really tough feats, and he almost did one of the toughest feats is to throw no-hitter, and I stood in his way, you know. And so you feel bad, but I didn't feel bad because I felt like I did what I was supposed to do, but, you know, he could have been a jerk about it, and when I saw him get really pissed, or you know, then I maybe would have thought differently about it. But he was so generous about it, so I was like, you know, I kind of felt bad, like, yeah, whatever, you know, part of the game.
How does it feel to have the best baseball nickname of all time, the Joker? And how long have you been called the Joker?
Oh, that started when I got traded to Pittsburgh in '97, and people still call me it. In fact, you know, I use it once in a while, my kids once in a while. I mean, I have my oldest son plays minor league baseball with the Nationals, and people say stuff to him about it, you know? And so it's pretty cool. I could have a worse nickname, but Bob Walk, who's doing radio for the Pirates then. And, I think he's still there, still doing it, but he's the one that gave it to me. And then it just kind of stuck, and people, you know, we had a pretty special year that year in '97. It was Pittsburgh, and so a lot of fans, and they have a passionate fan base, and they just started sending me Joker cards in the mail, and kind of went from there. And now it still hangs around, still there.
Joe, last question here. We appreciate your time. What is it like to still be a fan favorite in Kansas City? I mean, you haven't played in Kansas City since 2004. But as Sean just said, a lot of people, they still have very fond memories of that 03 Royals team and what you guys accomplished, and also remember your career here. What is it like to still be a fan favorite 17 years later?
Well, it definitely, it tugs at your heart for sure. And there's a lot of great people, and I still have some good friends there. And I think the main thing is where Kansas City is the type of town that's going to respect guys that go out and kind of keep their mouth shut, stay out of trouble, and play hard. And, you know, that's kind of how I think that relationship has started, as well as me choosing it as my home. You know, from the George Brett era, where most of those guys live there and they still kind of live there, Frank White, John Watson, you know, Mike Boddicker, Mike McFarland, Jeff Montgomery. I mean, there's a lot of ex-players that live in Kansas City. And I chose for my team, I was the only guy that chose that to live there. And I think fans appreciated that. And, you know, you run into people at the grocery store, at the gas station. And if you're an upfront, likable guy, I mean, I would talk to everybody. There was no one, you know, hey, this is kind of what we feel this team's going to be like this year. Or, you know, so I think that has a lot to do with it as well. But I think Kansas City likes a genuine guy. And I think they like a guy that is not going to all be about contracts and money and caused a lot of trouble. They like guys that are real people, and I kind of consider me being one of those guys.
That is Joe Randa. Very happy to have him on our show today. He played for the Royals 1995 to 1996, came back to the Royals from 1994 to 2004, a fan favorite here in Kansas City. Joe, appreciate you coming on to help celebrate opening day. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks for having me, and go Royals.
Always good to catch up with a fan favorite like Joe Rand. I've got a question to ask you guys coming up on the other side. Keep it locked in right here. We'll also get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Really only one top story. Adalberto Mondesi finds himself on the disabled list. And arguably the greatest pitcher in Royals history, Brett Saberhagen. He is our final guest of the day. He will be on with us coming up after the hits. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey.com app.